copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
And the focus for the presentation is cross-cultural leadership challenges and opportunities. I'm particularly focused on from a Western vantage point, and what does that mean for people from the West who are trying to lead cross-culturally, and we find many of us in this situation. Over the last 15 years, I've been collecting images of Jesus, and I'm going to use them as illustrations. I've got about 5,300 images right now of his life from all over the world. And they give us a certain vantage point because we see how in the imagination of others from around the world, they see what Jesus looked like. So I'm going to use these to illustrate the cultural values. Let me ask how many of you have had the chance to read the paper? It's a very short paper, so if you didn't read it beforehand, you can read it while I'm talking and you'll be fine with that if you have a copy of it. But I'm just going to talk about three different types of values that impact leadership in cultures. And the first is known as power distance. In every society, people have different layers of power. The question is, to what extent do they idealize having those layers? So some students of mine went to a Vietnamese church and they wanted to know not just what year they were born, but what month they were born. Because that would tell them whether you're my older brother or my younger brother, you're my older sister or my younger sister, and once you've taken that relationship, you are permanently my older brother or my younger brother, as the case might happen to be. And it was trying to give them the sense of, where do I fit in the power hierarchy? And to me, the image of Jesus chasing people out of the temple, I don't know if you see this, this reminds me so much of a Norman Rockwell painting of a little boy running away with Jesus holding the whip. But it's Jesus exercising power, in that sense, the power of God. The second set of values are how we understand ourselves. Do you see yourselves in light of a very large lineage? A friend of mine, Tony, from Bulgaria, I asked him how long his family has been in their village. 700 years in the same home. As an American, I have no mental space for 700 years. It doesn't work for me in any way, shape, or form. And I come here to Europe, and it works for you quite well relative to how it, anything older than 10 years old in the United States is an antique, I believe, these days. That's the simple reality. And the last thing is perhaps one of those that's most slippery. The most on the surface is power. Second most is individualism versus collectivism. The third one is the concept of either justice or honor. Now, sometimes you hear honor contrasted with shame, and that's taking a positive and a negative thing. Instead of comparing two positive values, one positive value being honor and the other positive value being justice. And how do people approach that? We'll talk about that in a second. But when we're looking at these leadership definition challenges, I define two orientations that cultures tend to take, not every society in the world. But typically, cultures that are more individualistic are also smaller in power distance, and they also tend to be justice-oriented. And we tend to see this across Northern Europe. Not exclusively, but that's the tendency. I want to be careful not over-stereotyping. I'm an American. I do that all the time, don't I? The other side is the collective, larger power distance and honor-based societies. We tend to see these more in the southern side of Europe, if we're focusing just on Europe. Question?
Power distance. I was to do the first image, or what is the smaller power distance?
Smaller power distance means I idealize making these roles, these power differentials, as small as possible. A larger power distance means I want that separation. So if you're my older brother by a day, that means that you have more power than I do. Whereas an American, if you're my older brother by a day, I don't care. You know, I want to make you equal with me or below me in some way. And that's part of the dynamic that we face when we're looking at these. Does the society idealize this separation? Or does idealize squashing them? In Israel, you have a proverb, a private can tell the general what to do. That's a small power distance proverb. That means that you, and in businesses and corporations, if you're a small power distance, you have to convince your employees of change. If it's a large power distance, you just have to announce the change. And it's anticipated that they will follow the direction that you have set. By and large, the ISJ type of societies, people want to respect the opinion of the individual. They will tolerate deviation from the norm more. Be yourself is a phrase you hear in American education on a regular basis. Democratic, and this doesn't mean you vote, but it means in making a decision, it's not just the top person who announces it. It's people who discuss it. And these are, you find these idealized. They don't always work out, depending on the nature of the company or the church. And they tend to work from policy. And if there's a problem that needs some type of arbitration, what does the policy say? Would be a fair question to ask in this setting. On the other hand, in the CLH type of societies, and you'll notice that some of these are in between because they might be individualistic and yet honor-centered. So they don't fit quite in the pattern, and they are unique, and you'll find mixes of these ideas. They respect the decision of the elders or the people in power. They promote group harmony. So what you do is an attempt to make sure that the group is together with each other. There is an autocratic from the top decision-making style. Not universally, but you tend to see this more. And they value the honor or status of members. So the retired chairman of the board, who is an emeritus, will still be consulted to make sure that this fits his, typically, idea of what should be done. And it's not always true. This tends to be more masculine. This can be more feminine, but doesn't have to be in the way you see things. So the question is now, I find on a regular basis in the West, we talk about biblical leadership. And it's a wonderful idea. But what's the model we use for that? And the reason I have this particular image, this is Warner Solomon's image. He was a student at Moody, and the dean at Moody told him, I want you to paint an image of Jesus that's really masculine, rather than these feminine type of images. So Warner Solomon, out of a Swedish background, painted this. If you see this in real life, it's a blue-eyed, blonde-haired Jesus, a perfect Mediterranean stereotype, right? No, doesn't fit at all. And so when I, from the West, image leadership, I tend to make leadership out in my own image, built on these ideals that I carry with me as to what a leader should be. So I was on staff with Crew for 14 years, and we talked about finding leaders who were faithful, available, and teachable. We used the word FAT. To line up those three letters is a nice little acronym. Africans didn't always like that because fat is something you eat. Well, you don't want a leader who's edible. That just doesn't make a lot of sense to us. But when I thought about what faithful meant, it meant they would show up to meetings on time. When I thought about available, they were there when I needed them to be, or I was there when I thought about teachable. All these things were culturally mediated. They weren't simply gospel mediated, because I see gospel as an enfleshed person who is culturally mediated. I'm not turning it all relative, but I am trying to help us understand culture can get in the way of our understanding of what a leader should be. So the BBC asked a forensic anthropologist to construct an image of what Jesus probably really looked like based on the skulls of first century Palestinian Jews. And here's the image they came up with. That's a radically different image than you might think of when you think of what Christ looked like. But if I were to dare say which of these two might be closer to the actual biblical image, at least the BBC image has a chance of looking like Jesus, as opposed to the blonde-haired, semi-blonde-haired, blue-eyed Swede that Warner Solomon painted. So my question is, how do we image leadership then? Now, as I note in my paper, the ISJ also tends to have advantages. There's a website called World Mapper, which is a fun little website that the fatness of the world, here I'm using that word again, is based on how much they have of particular value. So here you see, this is gross domestic product by the value of the currency. So the fatter the country, the better the spending and purchasing power of the individuals in the country. Southern Europe, Africa, you can barely see, Latin America. You get some parts of, this is Japan, by the way, relative to the rest of Asia. China is much smaller. India is kind of skinny there. You've got the Middle East here, the Stan countries along the line here. Europe is very big. And so in one sense, what you're seeing is a wealth advantage on the part of many of the ISJ countries, which tends to mean they often are seen to be the people who should be in some leadership role. And they want to assume that their model of leadership is the right model because, of course, it's the biblical model. And that's where I want to challenge my own assumptions as well as our assumptions also. Where do the latest and greatest products come from? Where do the latest and greatest church models come from? And in the days of the internet, everything is leaking everywhere else. And so it's very easy for people on social media to go to a place that has greater wealth, greater social power, greater opportunity, and say, this is the type of leader I want to be. And perhaps in the process, not being a leader that fits best their society and their norms. This really came home to me getting to know a group called University Bible Fellowship. They're a Korean group. They're the largest Korean sending mission agency in the world, roughly 1,500 missionaries in 110 countries. Fewer than five of their people are on support. All the rest are tent makers. Every one of them is working somewhere in a full-time job. That's how they earn their money to live, and they're also then ministering outside of that. But one of the things I noticed, they brought me to Korea to speak to them on contextualization, and I looked at all the Americans that were part of the group, and I mentioned to my Korean host, these Americans are social outliers. I would call them abnormal. In the United States, they were socially awkward. How did they fit in here? Because they were able to act like Koreans. And so the Korean group wanted them in leadership. What this did was force me to look at my own group crew and say, we had a Kenyan national director, but did we choose him because he's able to act like an American? So he was Kenyan and had a Kenyan passport. In what sense were my ideals of leadership being imposed on him? And if people wanted to advance in the organizations, they had to learn to act like me rather than to act like the people their own country expected them to be. So what I talk about in the paper is a third way, and this is particularly advice for Western leaders, for ISJ-type leaders, rather than advice for CLH type of leaders. First, learning to listen well. It's a word I don't often hear about Americans. Do you ever hear people say Americans really know how to listen? Now, I see the smiles on your face. You might be embarrassed to laugh at that question, but the reality is that's not a term you typically hear. And I can speak for Americans. I can't speak for Norwegians or for Swedes or for Brits. I can only speak for Americans in that sense. Have we learned how to listen in terms that make sense to the speaker? Or do we redefine everything they say in ways that make sense to us? Secondly, and I love this picture, it's painted by a Filipino artist. Valuing leaders who lead in the local ways rather than in the Western ways. And I particularly like that it's the white person with the huge log in his eye that's pulling the speck out of the Filipino eye. I was in the Philippines. I had been in country for 1 hour at the time. So I'm, as an American, I'm approaching expertise culturally. And driving from the airport late on a Saturday night, I was observing traffic patterns. And having lived in Africa for a decade, I understood things. And so I asked the American missionary who had been there 15 years, I asked him, tell me, are stoplights suggestive or imperative? And he said, they're suggestive. And it's 10:30 at night in the Philippines. There's far more traffic than you'd find at 10:30 at night in the United States. But it's light. And we came up to a left-hand turn This is the American driving side of the road, so you're turning against traffic. And he stopped. And the cars behind him, in a nice, polite Filipino way, honked to let him know he should go ahead and go. But he just stayed there. And so they went around him to turn left because there was no traffic coming on. And then the light changed and he turned left. And I thought about it for a while and I asked him, I said, tell me, you said stoplights are suggestive, but you just treated that stoplight that was imperative. How? Help me understand. He said, I'm trying to teach the Filipinos how to drive. And I said, the only thing you're teaching them is how to be an idiot. You know, that you don't know how to drive, you don't know the dance. Now, the next time I went to the Philippines, it was an American missionary then been there 25 years, but I could see he knew the dance of the road. I said, what are the rules of the road? He said, if your bumper is 1 centimeter in front of another bumper, you have the right of way. But if you get into an accident and you're the nicer car, it's your fault. And I thought, those don't make sense to me. But he understood those rules of the road, so to speak, that were part of it. How can I value a Filipino leader who acts like a Filipino? Not like, dare I use the word, a bastardized American. Someone who really doesn't have American heritage but is able to act like one. Valuing honor and face. This is the woman at the well. This is the woman caught in adultery. The first one is the woman at the well who Jesus listened to. And you remember the disciples came and their jaws dropped open. They couldn't believe he was talking with a woman. The second one is just the parable, the speck in your eye. This is the woman caught in adultery. Jesus recognizing the game that the Pharisees were playing and refusing to play the game the same way they did. But he acknowledge the reality of honor and face. And it's funny, you ask Americans about honor and face in the Bible and they won't think of a passage. They generally don't understand what a huge role it's been playing in the lives of people culturally in the Middle East. And so for them, it's off of their radar. And often they will think it's unbiblical because they haven't taken the time to get into the scriptures and look at it. And they don't understand, perhaps for some, of the most important passage in the Bible might be Jesus scorning the shame of the cross from Hebrews 11. As opposed to Jesus dying for their sins. Because the way they connect to the atonement is through face rather than through justice. And it doesn't mean justice is wrong. It doesn't mean honor is better. It's a different orientation towards looking at things. This is one of my favorite images. I'll get out of the way so most of you can see it. Is Jesus just chilling on the beach with the disciples from Indonesia. And one of the things that Western leaders need to learn how to do is when to slow down. There's a wonderful Japanese book, 3 Mile an Hour God. Jesus walked 3 miles an hour. That was his life's pace. I was just talking to the provost of my institution yesterday. She said she sent out 1,200 emails in the month of April. Her delete box from January 1st has over 13,000 emails in it. Email is killing us, and it's not helping us slow down. All it's doing is helping us speed up. So don't email me after the conference, okay? Help me slow down.
What is the what?
This it's just showing Indonesians come in a variety of colors. And so that's all that is displaying. I especially love the sunglasses. He's just relaxed there. And how do we approach policy as a Western leader? At a Korean and American missionary conference on accountability, one Korean stood up and said, I get this now, I understand this. You Americans have a policy economics. We have a relationship economics. He said, if something goes wrong, you look first to the policy, and that's where you find your answer. He said, we don't ignore the policy, but we only see the policy in light of the relationship we have with the person. So it's always policy, but mediated by relationships. You Americans don't care about the relationships. All you care about is the policy. Well, I've seen enough American management techniques to know that if you're the right person, policy can be ignored. So it's not completely true. But the reality is that's the approach we're perceived to be. We are Pharisaical in that sense compared to what the Korean was thinking good leadership should be. Okay, so these are areas that I say are impacting us or should impact us. I'll leave these images up. The next question I was just going to say, let's interact. Let's talk about this. What are things you've seen? What are stories that come out of your life and your experience? What are questions that you have that get us into understanding some of this perhaps third way of thinking through cross-cultural leadership that doesn't just take the models from my society and impose them? And I'm speaking specifically to those of you who are from West and perhaps from more the northern side of Europe to the southern side of Europe. Thoughts or questions or comments?
I was listening to a guy called Simon Sinek, who's a European who lives in the States now, and did a TED talk, the third most viewed TED talk. And he was talking about the last one about policies and procedures about, and he gave the example of United Airlines some years ago.
Yes.
where the police ejected the doctor.
The reluctant passenger.
and he said, the staff, he expected the reaction of the staff to say, I was just following policy.
Right.
I was doing what I was told to do.
Right.
And he said, we need to have authenticity to know what is the right thing to do, if that's not what the policy is, and to have that relationship.
We need a human approach to policy rather than a policy approach to policy, if I can put it that way. But it ties right into what we were saying here. That's a justice. And it's not wrong, by the way. And I think, again, as a crew staff member, the four spiritual laws are framed completely in terms of a justice worldview. Doesn't mean they're wrong, but that's the framing. What would the framing be for a face-oriented society? And there was a wonderful article in Taiwan Missionary Journal in 1986, four laws for a Chinese setting. And it talks about none of us is able to express the filial relationship that we need to have with our parents. And that's how they approach the idea of sin, as opposed to we're all sinners. And it hits some of what you're saying there. And it's been sad to watch the airlines go down across the United States now over these issues. It seems like every other week another airline has kicked somebody off or done something like that and either apologizes or doesn't apologize for it. Policy. Good insight. Thank you.
Scott, in the network society that we live in, where leadership mm-hmm. has been globalized mm-hmm.
and homogenized in some respects.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Pasteurized and sterilized.
Yeah. Where the nodes, the way that you get things done, are often controlled still by people in that top left-hand side.
Right.
There are a lot of reasons why someone would present as that left-hand column, even if they would
prefer to. And that side would value presenting that way if that's what is the right way to do in that setting. Yeah. They're more culturally in tune than many of us from that side of the coin are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are there any ways in which you could subvert that the presentation, I think, it highlights the challenge. It's huge.
It does.
It's blind to it. We don't treat Europe as a sociological or anthropological context in the same way we would think about this much more consciously if we think about Africa or Asia.
I would love to see leaders from the West thinking this way and being able to speak about this in public. Even at something like this, the European Leadership Forum, it can present itself as though there really is only one style of leadership across Europe, and that's the biblical style. And I've already said no. That doesn't work. Cross-cultural leadership is a different story. But I think for the most part, those in power need to be confronted by others in power. And so I see this as one of my jobs, perhaps, to be a gadfly, so to speak, to speak into North American, from my vantage point, leadership, and force North Americans to be asking questions that they're not. Some of them are, but enough of them are not asking questions. And I don't know who the same people would be on the European side who could ask that same question. And it's interesting, I can ask it one way for the United States, but it does need to be asked a different way among the British and a different way among the Norwegians than it does among the Americans. And so what we need are, dare I say it, subversive elements within those places that can speak to their own leadership in ways their own leadership understands. Because when I talk this way to Americans, they tend to get it. They don't always know how to apply it because they're left thinking, oh man, I can think of 25 ways that I did something wrong last week or last month or last year. Now what do I do? And sometimes that's a more extended discourse then, or putting them in, if they're reading types, putting them into articles or books that help them deal with that. Getting them to the Shame and Honor Conference that's taking place in Chicago in June, where at least North American leaders are trying to wrestle with this and say to themselves, what are we missing and how do we need to fix ourselves? So I wish I had better suggestions than that. But it's one of the reasons when I was editing EMQ, I tried to make sure the voices that were challenging that were the type of voices that came to the front. And they were type of voices that I was hoping others were listening to, so it wasn't the standard, and there's nothing wrong with it, but the standard white, middle-aged, looking like me type of evangelical voice in missions. But it was the female voice. It was the majority world voice that was confronting us in a way that wasn't letting go of evangelical convictions, but forcing us to look at ourselves more deeply than we had been.
I'm just wondering, with the new democracies, whether that type of leadership, in a way, has filtered down to the average leadership, which you seem to say is still authoritarian.
It's a big man model, yeah.
The biblical style where it seemed good to us and the Holy Spirit, which is a consensual type of leadership. What is your experience of that? Because the authoritarian leadership can create huge problems.
It remains a massive problem in many parts of the world. And the challenge I get also is thinking through. So, for example, there was a good article, and my Spanish is close to non-existent, but a caudillo type of leadership, which is big man type of leadership, and it's the type of leadership that plays well in the Latin American setting. You see this among Pentecostal leaders, for example, on the evangelical side. And yet, in what sense does that need to be confronted? Because it is going against the grain. It's in the grain of the culture, but it's against the grain of Christ. At the same time, I've seen American leaders who are very good at preaching servant leadership as they're ordering others around and telling them what they need to do in the name of being a servant. That's why I recommended in the paper Dwayne Elmer's book on servanthood, because he doesn't like the term servant leadership either, because we fill it with whatever we want to fill it with. And so that's one of the things I want to check at. We had a couple of hands here.
I guess it's similar, actually.
Yeah. I wish I had a better answer for you, by the way. It's a very challenging question.
I think it's similar because thinking of the whole world of cross-cultural contextualizing, the challenges of identifying what is different and wrong and what's different and just different.
Yes, excellent. Here. Right.
One of the challenges, and you said it yourself, we can't make everything just relative to culture.
And
so that's the way they do it. We just have to, like you were suggesting there, if you have a leader in that context, they should lead the way that those people are. But then there are elements in that, like you were pointing out, that, well, that's not right. How do we challenge that? And I was thinking of it specifically with that valuing honor and face. I think that's a difficult one. The organization I work a lot with other young leaders in the East. And that's something that's come up quite a bit, sort of in Ukraine or Russia. And that I'd probably I'd say that I've observed that in their way of interacting. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to learn and understand. And some of it I go, okay, that I understand that's how you function.
That makes sense.
But on other sides, I'm like, I don't know, that verges on not being right to me. And how do you differentiate when it's just cultural and when, no, this is a biblical issue and I need to challenge it?
My ideal for that, and again, it's my American ideal, is to create this space for what missiologists have called a hermeneutical community. So it's a community of local believers, perhaps with some expatriates, because the expatriates can challenge them. I think theology is best done interculturally, because then you can look at me and say, you're being too American there. You're just a Yank. And yeah, that's right. Okay, help me rethink that through, unless my pride gets in the way, and it does for Americans. Well, no, you're just wrong. You know, it's one of those things where I think if you can generate the possibility of a local community who is willing to critically look at that, but it's hard from the insider point of view. And that's why sometimes they need some outsiders who can hold mirrors up for them. So it needs to be done in partnership. But ultimately, in the long run, what I want is local believers who know how to go to the text and then bring the text back into their culture and say, this is wrong and this is right and this is neutral. But that's the thing that I don't see enough of at this point in time. So how can we develop those type of communities, I think, is a critical question. Come here, and then James, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, I wanted to challenge a little bit, and I'm not sure if I heard you well or wasn't clear to me or everybody.
Thank you for saving my face, by the way, you're asking the question.
with the concept that there are advantages to one model or style and the other, and then it goes on with some of the comments and questions that have come up. So which is better, like is the more centralized authoritarian leadership really wrong or worse than the more,
right,
the word was used, more Holy Spirit, more biblical tone. And you illustrated it by using the development, I'm going to use that word, development aspect of the world
as a dividing line in one sense. Yeah.
This one the better. I wanted to challenge that. Is that really, when you talk about the third way, how do you say, okay, if it's not this or that one, there is a better
way? There is a third way. Yeah, yeah.
How do you illustrate that when you use the development figure to show that seems to be better?
Yeah, what I was saying with this figure was I was saying that in this contemporary world, this side has a bigger voice. I'm not saying it's a better voice. I'm just saying it's a bigger voice, and it tends to be listened to more, and it has more power in this world. And I would like to challenge that. I would like to say that's wrong for that to be going on. Both sides need a voice. And so what I was trying to point to is the way socioeconomic realities have created a space in which one side has more weight than the other. I don't like that. Does that make sense then, what you're asking? Yeah, okay. I'm sorry I didn't explain that well. Yeah.
Your illustration on the driving and... I was wondering if that driver who stopped at the traffic light after you asked the question actually stopped to please you.
And that's a good question.
He says, you know, it's to teach others, but he had an American.
It was an American. But he was an American.
No, I'm talking about the first one.
The first one, it was both American missionaries.
Okay.
Yeah, so the first one was an American missionary who was saying, if it was a Filipino, I have a completely different grid to think through that question. I agree with you. And I wasn't clear on that. It was an American the first time who was trying to teach the Filipinos how to drive. And I thought, no, he's not teaching them anything. Okay, James, last question, sorry.
Yeah, I just had the third way, that whole thing, is that primarily applicable to the ISJ and how ISJ needs to adjust, or is that a third way that is a...
I would like to think it's a two-way street.
Because there, CLH probably also needs to think of a third wave from their approach.
Right. Yeah, my assignment was to think through how Western leaders need to adopt in new situations. So that's why I'm looking at it from that vantage point. But you're absolutely right. It needs to be, the third way is a two-way street. How's that for saying it? And so people from CLH societies need to be able to criticize and critique things that are non-biblical or that are anti-biblical, just as ISJ people need to be able to do that. So anyway, I think my time is up.